Three. Oh, two. Wait. I got excited. Okay.
Ready?
Three, two, one. It's Shazam!
The podcast that hopes to make itself obsolete.
I'm Kayla.
And I'm Carissa. And
we have a guest. And she's amazing.
Get ready to be blown away. How are you, Kayla?
Oh, I'm so great, Carissa. Had a good day. Done so much work for Shazam, and I'm super pumped for upcoming shows. I've got a week at the castle coming up that I am preparing for. And it's a good day. How about you, Carissa?
I am also really excited. Kayla was kind enough to introduce me to the wonderful gentleman who runs the Magic Bar in LA.
Yeah.
And so Kayla and I are actually going to be switching positions for Halloween, playing a weird like body switching thing where Kayla's going to be doing a character.
Yes.
And I'm going to be doing bar magic.
Yeah.
So that's stressful.
It's going to be great. We're both doing things that are slightly out of our comfort zone. So it makes it really fun because then we've also been working with each other to help not be it out of our comfort zone. So it's going to be a really fun week, I think. It's going to be good. End of October.
Yay!
2 weeks.
Yes.
Oh, no. Two weeks.
Is it in 2 weeks?
It's in 2 weeks.
Not when this episode comes out. It's
not. Alrighty then.
So today we have an amazing guest, Virginia Henkins. And Kayla, did you know that she is the first and only female knight in the 50-year history of the U.S. original Renaissance Fair?
What?
Yeah.
That's insane. But wait, hold on. Did you know that our guest trains horses and has been training horses her entire life? And not only that, she owns a real-life unicorn. I didn't know that was a thing.
No, it's a thing.
That's, wow.
And I met the unicorn, and he's beautiful.
Oh, that's so cool.
Do you know that she is a national-level coach for USA Archery and is proficient in crossbow, swords, quarterstaff, handguns, and rifles?
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you know that our guest was the inspiration for the movie Brave?
Yeah, and that she owns and operates an amazing company called Shiro's Entertainment here in LA that does parties all over the place and is just an amazing company.
Wow. Did you know that she wrote the book on how to be a real life mermaid and she's the owner and operator of the LA Mermaid School?
Do you know that she's one of two female search and rescue scuba divers for the Ventura County Sheriff's Department?
Did you know that she won the Congressional Medal of Merit at the age of 17, which is for an academic achievement and service in the community?
Oh my goodness. And did you know that she is an Enterprise crew member on Star Trek Into Darkness?
No.
You guys, we have maybe the coolest guest in the planet.
We're quitting after this episode.
This is it. This is the end of the podcast. We're never going to do it again. We cannot top this moment. Welcome, Virginia. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my gosh, guys. Thank you so much for such an incredible welcome. I am so psyched to be talking to you two. I mean, it's like, come on. It's like, we're going to have the best time on this call today. And I am so thrilled that you invited me. So thank you.
Yeah, we are. This is great.
Is it surreal to hear all of those accomplishments listed back to you, like, in one go?
It really is, actually, because it's like, yes, of course I've done all those things. But seriously, you're listening to it, and you're like, no way. And you're like, yeah, right. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's my life. So it is totally surreal, actually. But, yeah, like, a nice work putting the unicorn with the mermaid with the Star Trek Enterprise. And all of them are real, and all of them have incredible stories.
Yeah. You can tell what our values are from that list very
right?
much.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. We're so happy to have you. I think we need to address one really important thing before we get started, and that is, where did you find this unicorn?
What is this unicorn?
So, interesting story about Milo the unicorn. His name is Milo, like Milo and Otis, is that Milo was a search of mine for a little under a year. It took me 11 months to find this horse.
Wow.
And the reason why it took so long is in LA is very stereotypical in many things, including parties. And I used to have this amazingly gorgeous big black horse who was perfect for the work. And he would never get hired because he was the wrong color. And so I was like, all right, well, if I'm going to be getting another unicorn, it has to be the color that will be hired by LA parties. So then I had to get a gray one. And then I wanted a certain breed. And I needed a certain temperament because not every animal wants to do that kind of work. You really have to find the animal that likes its job and is also super smart and a little inquisitive to the point where they're kind of a nuisance sometimes because because that's the kind of horse that makes a great stunt horse and a very good trick horse. So Milo, I was looking all over the United States to the point where I was even thinking about importing from Mexico or Spain to get a horse like this. And I finally just gave up and put up wanted ads on Facebook all over random horse boards and Craigslist with like my dream horse saying, if you see this animal, call me. And one day I got this phone call and this woman said, you're going to think I'm nuts, but I think I have your horse. And I'm like, what? And it was this like total serendipitous thing where it turned out in my national search, this horse was 10 minutes from my house. And it was owned by a 3-day event trainer. And oddly enough, he was actually not sound at the time. Sound means that it wasn't walking properly because he had a really bad shoeing job where the farrier just had botched the entire barn and all the horses were down. But I went out and she was like, you know what? Just please come meet him based on your description of what you like doing. I think this horse and you would get along really well. So I'm like, okay, 10 minutes from the house. That's no biggie. I've been driving like 4 hours each way to go see horses and thinking about flights. So I went and he was the like most bold horse that was super friendly, basically like, hi, I'm fabulous. You should talk to me. And I'm like, okay, you're fabulous and I should talk to you. So I actually like started half leasing him just to get to know him, because whenever I have a stunt horse, they're a lot of work because you're literally making a symbiotic relationship with a different species. You have to work well together and it's a partnership, because if the horse doesn't want to, they're going to make your day miserable. Mm-hmm. If they love their job, it's the best day at work. So I was able to just half lease him just to get the trainer some money for the courtesy of me wasting her time. And in the end, I ended up with a pony for Christmas, so to speak, and also the best riding instructor I've ever had in my life. And I mean, I've trained with Olympians and this girl blows them out of the water. It's insane. She's even been up for every one of my crazy ideas, including side saddle. So Milo the horse does live with me on the property in his very own barn. And I actually submitted him for Animal Planet Animal Cribs and they said no, because he didn't live in the house, but I'm still trying to get him on there. I think he needs a castle.
I love
that. That's so perfect, because I've had the pleasure of being at Virginia's house, and it looks like somebody took a couple rooms from a castle in Arthurian lore, and they were like, you just live here now. Just live in this house. Everything's beautiful and like looks like it got stolen from a castle. It's
well, I mean, that makes sense, because Virginia, you are the first and most likely the only female knight in the 50-year history, as we said, of the Renaissance Fair. Can you talk about that process? Like, what made you want to be a knight in the Renaissance Fair? And then what was that process like, especially coming from the you're the only woman perspective?
Yeah, well, I am going to preface this where I was the first woman at the original Renaissance Pleasure Fair, so the one that started it all. By no means am I the only female knight at a Renaissance Fair, so I want to be very, very clear on that to also give respect to a couple of the ladies that did exist before me. And they, I mean, they're tanks. There are still women doing it, but again, it is still very, very rare, because simply put, most Renaissance Fair jousting troops and jousting directors are male-dominated, they're male-led, and unfortunately, they don't believe that women should do it. And that's the same for medieval times, the largest entertainment medieval type organization in the entire country. A guy can walk into medieval times with a good look and a decent acting resume, and they provide everything from him. Mm. You know, they provide some benefits, they provide pay, they provide all the armor, all the training, all the horses. You know, they are treated like a true employee. If you're a woman going into even something like medieval times or Renaissance Fair, they say, oh, that's cute, you're here for the knights. Mm. And that's not true. At least it wasn't true in my case. It might be true in some. But I had read this incredible book called The Lioness Quartet. It was a set of 4 books by an author called Tamara Pierce. And I'm really lucky enough to call her a friend now by total fluke that happened later on. But it was about this female knight, and she had red hair, and she rode horses and loved her horses and went on adventures. And still to this day, one of the best fantasy novel series I've ever read. And I always loved horses, and I always loved history, and I read that book, and I said to myself before I knew all that about the fairs in medieval times, you know what? This sounds amazing. I should do this, because that's kind of how I get into most of my predicaments or adventures. And so I didn't understand at that point how hard that was going to be. I just knew that it sounded fun, and this girl in this book could do it, so why couldn't I? And I think a lot of times with women as well as men, that's how it starts, is you see someone that inspires you or read about someone that inspires you, and you want to be like them. So when I started that, it was in college, and I was already doing archery and very skilled at that. I was already a captain of the fencing team, and I didn't see any reason why I couldn't do this thing. And then I started reaching out, and joust troops kept telling me no. And I was not welcome, and that was cute. Maybe I'd like to handle merchandise.
Oh, my goodness.
And, yeah, it was eventually, oddly enough, a gentleman from Canada, I'm blanking on who it was up there, but he was nice enough to say, hey, you know, I see you on these boards. I see you participating every day, and you still can't find a trainer, huh? And I'm like, yeah, I can't find anyone to train me. You know, I'm willing to pay. And that's also something the men don't have to do. They get it for free. And I was working a corporate job, and I was like, look, I can pay for lessons, just train me, and no one would touch me. So the guy in Canada basically explained, you know, look, I'm sorry, that's just the way it is, but there's a group called the SCA, or Society for Creative Anachronism, and they don't care if you're a girl. So you might try them and see if they'll start working with you. And I did, and they did. I ended up becoming what's called a Golden Lance, which is their highest level in the SCA for mounted combat / mounted weapons training. And then the thing is, it was expensive, like really expensive, where, again, I didn't get the luxury of walking into a barn and being given a horse and loan somebody's armor and saying, okay, man, let's go. I was, every single time I turned around, it was, no one will actually have armor in my size because I'm very slim build. And so I had to find an armor that was willing to even make custom patterns to fit a woman's body to see if it would even work. And I ended up finding that person, and he was wonderful. And I was just, every time I turned around, it was like, okay, save up money and buy my own sword. Save up money and buy my own truck. Save up money and buy my own string of stunt horses. Save up money and buy my own everything. And no one else had to do that. And that was really frustrating because it felt like you're spending so much time working when you could just, you know, be accepted in a group and just start going and doing it and being trained on the side. But that's not the road I was given. So I was very, very fortunate along the way where I was at a donation, a little itty bitty Renaissance fair in Central California. And I, at that time, because I was still doing the SCA stuff and still working hard about becoming a knight, is I had some beautiful armor, and I somehow got connected with a referral to this little joust troop, which is now no longer in existence. And I went there to do a games exhibition. And the gentleman who was running the troop at that time was lovely. And he was like, wow, you've done all this by yourself. And I'm like, yeah, with some help, but all this I've done. And he was like, you know what? You want to be here, I'll train you.
Wow.
And that was amazing. And Jeff just was an extremely good horseman. He now lives in Europe with his wife and their two children. And it was just such a relief to finally find someone that said, you know what? Okay, you really are serious. You know what? I don't care that you happen to be a girl. If you're a good student, I want to teach you.
Wow.
And I think that was incredible. So, like, as you keep becoming something of a novelty, and I do have one of the more stereotypical fantasy looks, which works very well in my favor. It's like one of those things, growing up with red hair, you're harassed horribly, but all of a sudden you become an adult female, and it's like the ultimate fantasy novel. That I got the attention, and I kept going up in the SCA, and that's when I got the break at the Renaissance Fair. And the interesting thing is, it was kind of like, you don't always know what something's going to be like until you actually, quote, make it. And then you realize that even though you made it and you fought so hard to get there, that you don't really enjoy it. And I had one of the worst bosses in the history of my entire career. And at the same time, I was again, you know, life gives me some blessings. And when they're throwing this guy that was almost setting horses on fire and was screaming at me after shows about what an idiot I was and what a terrible performer I was, and like he'd give him and all the other male knights microphones, and I wasn't allowed to use one. And so I was having to shout my lines in this like huge Coliseum arena of hundreds of people where no one could hear me. And then I'd go backstage, and every single time I was backstage, he was yelling at me, telling me I was so worthless. And I wasn't. And thankfully, on the Star Trek Enterprise, in the future, so to speak, there was a place for me. And I was going between my corporate job and the Enterprise for J.J. Abrams. And this fair where I thought it was going to be, you know, my dream. And thankfully, I was in space for half the week, because when I got to set with J.J. Abrams, even though I was an extra, yeah, I was an Enterprise crew member, but I was an extra, and extras are a dime a dozen in Hollywood. J.J. and his assistant every single day would greet all of us by name. When he saw me do something, he would acknowledge it and encourage me to keep working and respect me as a person, even though I was no one in Hollywood. You know, like I had a good resume, but I was working with J.J. Abrams. I mean, come on, Chris Pine was on the set with me, as well as Cumberbatch. So, you know, they're someone in Hollywood. But it was the best thing because, you know, I'd go to work there being totally respected and competent and treated as a professional, and the fact that I had every right to be there. And I'd go back to this fair and being told that I was an idiot and worthless. And at the same time, I was making a grand total every day, I think, of $75 for 14 to 16 hour day, where I'd provide all my horses and all my costumes and all my food and live in a tent or a trailer and provide all the veterinary certificates. It was probably like close to $100,000 just to do this, where all the guys got it for free.
Jeez.
So it was a unique perspective.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's not
But that
fair.
Element of having the contrast in the environment, working with J.J. Abrams and working on this fair, we've encountered that with other women before, where it's like sometimes you just need to have someone go, or something that shows you this is not okay.
Mm. Yeah, and I honestly at that point, because it was so miserable, and it's like I was literally seeing the joust list caught on fire, and they weren't running pyro rehearsals, and they just grabbed a random person to hold a like open can of white gasoline with a torch. Like I stopped two horses from being burned on that. And it was just stupidity, in my opinion. And it was just so frustrating. I didn't appreciate the verbal abuse, and I really didn't appreciate it. But at the same time, like, again, it was kind of like that one guy at the small Renaissance fair that just wanted a great student. The approach that JJ, at least on that set, had was he wanted a great crew. He wanted to make a good product. If you were there wholeheartedly with him, you were welcome. And that really inspired me to actually start my company. Because at that point in time, as much as I'd loved all the history and the horses and the pageantry and performance and all the stuff that I put so much time and energy into it, I was so sick of this man that I wanted to quit everything. Like, I actually wouldn't even touch anything medieval for probably 3 years without swearing. It was that bad. And it, yet, J.J. Abrams, because of the way he treated me, and then an opportunity I got to go on a water shoot of all things, are what kept me in performance art, is just being treated decently as a human. And I think that was probably one of the best things I could have learned, because I saw what could truly happen if you were nice to your crew, if you're polite to people and had high expectations, because J.J. Abrams runs a tight, tight set. But at the same time, he was so successful. And seeing the contrast between that about people, you know, and I have nothing against the fact that we all periodically live in like camper trailers and go places, but you're comparing that to like this man who makes millions on work, and seeing that you can be such a elegantly polite, polished professional to the people around you and still be such a success in Hollywood. I think that was a remarkable lesson, and I'm truly grateful. Like, he doesn't even know I exist, I doubt, but, you know, I definitely have that in my heart about, I have so much thanks to him, or also, you know, again, to that one male knight that gave me my start from Canada, or that other guy that helped pull me up when I was at that little fair and was like, you know what, you deserve a chance too. So, like, you know, it's interesting about seeing both the best kinds of people and the worst kinds of people in the entertainment industry.
Yeah, I love that your story involves so much fantastic male advocacy after a lot of being held down and being told no and things coming up over and over and over again. I love that your story does contain like a few men who are just like, no, this is dumb. I want to be part of the solution. How can I help?
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I think that sometimes, especially in the modern age, it's really easy to just go black and white about men are bad. They all think this. And that's not true because men are people, too. And women are people, too. Women definitely aren't innocent of everything they claim. And we all know that, I think, as girls on this call. But it was, you know, give credit where credit's due about people that treat you well. It doesn't matter if they're male, female, or undecided. It's just like, you know, are they a good person and do they help make the world a better place? And if so, you know, honor them, learn from them, and really just thank your stars that they came into your life, that at that moment they could help you and keep you on your way.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I think for, like, we've shared sort of our stories of how other people have helped us too. And for us, you know, I didn't see a female perform magic for a long time. And it was really men who were willing to, they sort of similar to your stories. It's like they saw the passion and the interest that we had as young girls or and adults and everything. And people were saying, oh, if you love this so much and are willing to put in the effort and no one's helping you, then I should help you. And so that's one of the things we always say is like, what can we do to help women in a male dominated industry? Well, help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Show some help.
Try and find a way to work with women.
Yeah. And it's like, it's sometimes the littlest things about just being nice. Like sometimes that's all you need is just be treated by another person. You know, you're another person that has a similar interest. Cool. Let's talk about that thing together. Like that's fine.
Yeah. Just being treated like an equal.
Yeah. And I definitely saw that in engineering school, too. I did a dual major in biomedical and mechanical engineering at University of Southern California, which is it won College of the year I entered there. Amazing school. I love my school. It's
what's not even in your bio list? How are you still? Sheesh.
How old are you where you've done everything?
She's 97.
That's the only logical answer.
Yes.
You know how we were talking about before the call started? I got up today at 2:30 a.m. and it's currently 5:30 p.m. Yeah, that's how I get stuff done.
Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, it was amazing because I had the same experience, thankfully, at USC, where science is hard sciences as engineering is classified because it's got a ton of units that you have to go through in order to get through that. It was the same thing. Like USC, I also had really good grounds where in an average class there were 30 people and there were two girls. And it wasn't that the college was against having women. Women didn't put themselves up for that degree. And so when we got there, it was an interesting experience where the guys were fine for the most part because they're like, oh, cool. You know, we all have to work hard and we're all so sleep deprived. It doesn't matter what you look like. And also USC was an amazing experience where they deeply supported all students. So they went above and beyond, regardless of who we were, to always provide office hours and assistance and free tutoring and everything else just to help make everyone succeed regardless because they wanted to be there. And I think that was also, you know, great experience about, sure, I was one girl in a group of men, but, you know, okay, well, I chose to be here.
Yeah.
So why should I blame them for not understanding me all the time? Sure, I have PMS. They don't. Good for them. But you know, it wasn't their fault. And same with fencing. You know, I chose to go into that because I wanted to. It's not like someone was preventing me from doing it. And I actually became the president over there. But I think that's also kind of an interesting approach where I've been in very male heavily dominated fields. And if you just kind of go in, then sometimes you'll get lucky, like at USC, where they absolutely welcome women. And they're just so grateful that you want to come play too, that it's like, here, you know, let's have all equal stuff, which is much compared to what I was growing up, actually in grade school, they would actually take the science equipment from the girls because they thought the boys needed it more. And so by the time I got to college and had equal opportunity, quite literally, because as long as you were working just as hard, because it was so hard, you know, people didn't care. Of course you got that beaker. Of course you got those chemicals. You know, why wouldn't you? And it was a really good experience. But, you know, stuff like that compared to, you know, the Renaissance fairs, I would love one day to do a cameo at Medieval Times. I don't think it'll ever happen, but like that would be a wish about just actually be able to train with them, ride with them, and just be a girl knight out there, because they don't hire them. And at the same time, you know, I know that there's undoubtedly other areas where men have the same disadvantage. You know, they have the stigma, for instance, in dance. A straight man doing dance probably has much of the same experience about not a lot of people like him in there. Or other things like male nursing, same thing. There's still a bit of a stigma there, even though men were nurses until Florence Nightingale. And she kind of put a different PR campaign on it. But it's interesting how the world treats people and, you know, wants to lump them tidily about what they can and cannot do.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've moved so much in these male-dominated environments, and then you're also a mermaid, which in and also not just a mermaid, but a leader in that industry.
Right.
Which, I mean, am I wrong in saying that that's primarily female-dominated?
Well, it's really interesting, right? Because when I got so burnt out on that Renaissance fair about, you know, just being so tired of the verbal abuse and the safety problems, that I literally was at the mindset where I was so done that I literally thought to myself, what is the farthest I can get from being in a hot, sweaty arena in 100 degrees, being like filthy all the time? And then this random woman that I'd met and done a photo shoot with once before said, so one of my models canceled. Do you want to come to Mexico? And I'm like, yeah, I need this vacation right now. And then she said that, you know, she had stuff to shoot, but I could come up with ideas. And so again, with the complete polar opposite about what's the farthest thing you can go from that, I was like, I want to be a mermaid. And it was never supposed to be a thing, you know, but sometimes life kind of takes you and it grabs you. And it's like, yeah, you should do that thing. So 6 years later, I own one of the biggest mermaid companies in the world. I perform for past presidents. I have clients like CBS and MTV and some of the Disney franchise and Google and all kinds of stuff. And we do a lot of high-end A-list celebrity parties. And I never saw that coming. If you told me when I was in engineering school I'd run a party company, I would have laughed. I mean, because I wasn't even in a sorority. What on earth would I know about throwing a party? But turns out I'm really good at it. And that's been a remarkable change. And it is highly female-dominated. It's about as female-dominated as the jousting industry is male. It's the polar opposite completely. You know, one's hot and sweaty, one's cold and freezing, you know, and wet. And one is mostly all men with very rare exception. You know, exactly the Fairy Queen, as she's called in the East Coast. She runs a company that welcomes women. Seattle Knights does as well. But in the mermaid industry, it's very rare to see a male. And unfortunately, it's not something that always attracts straight men. I don't actually know of any straight male company owners in the United States in the mermaid business. And it's that far removed. But that's also the equivalent, again, with the jousters and the knights, where I only know of one company led by a female. So it's interesting seeing those two. And also the approach to business and the approach to talking. And they've got very, I think whenever you get a very bipolar mix, you get this interesting thing where balance kind of stops a bit, where, as an example, with the male dominated industry, they'll just be, you know, chewing each other out on the boards and blah, 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 you need to fight me, blah, you know, when they're really riled up, because there's not a lot of female influence to kind of tone it down, with rare exception of some of the guys who are, again, extraordinary people. And then with the mermaid industry, there's so much catfighting. It's the opposite thing, but it's equal and same. And I think that maybe when the two combine, that's where you really get the balance. And that's when you really get the amazing workplaces and, you know, just the level of respect about, okay, we're working together now. So yeah, very, very different industry. But again, it's all still performance art. That's actually where I did my first live show with magic, was underwater and blind in a mermaid tank. And that was a really good way. I mean, talk about sink or swim. You just put a mermaid tail on and go do magic.
That's amazing. Can you touch upon, just to backtrack just a little bit, can you touch upon a little bit more of sort of the positives and negatives that a female-dominated industry has?
Absolutely. So in the mermaid industry, as an example, it's very female dominated. And I think in some ways that's very good. And in some ways it has some negativity that if there were more men in it would actually be balanced out. Same thing for any male dominated industry. When I'm noticing it with the female industry, it's very cat-ish.
Sure.
And I mean that in terms of this is my territory, do not come in. And also copycat-ish, where I don't see a lot of ingenuity in it at all. I see a lot of copycats. I mean, I've full-on had my website copied verbatim by competitors in my region. I've had my look copied and mimicked to the point of people getting a tail just the same color mermaid tail as mine and putting on a red wig in my region. I've had people lie and say that they have my resume that don't. And it's like, at least in some other, you know, disciplines, some people are a little bit more creative. But in the mermaids, I don't see a lot of people coming up with creative content. And I also don't see a lot of dialogue, which means that unlike, for instance, like a Kadabra board where people are talking about the newest and greatest trick or this thing that they tried. And hey, did you have an idea for how to deal with this particular kind of child? A lot of the mermaid communities are very silent because the only thing they're posting is how wonderful they are. And many of them don't actually offer support. A lot of them don't really offer suggestions. But at the same time, I think it's because they don't have a lot of original thought and content because they're so concerned about their appearance and being judged against that, that they think that that's the only thing that matters. And I find that to be really shallow and not something that I ever really got with the guys, because when you have more males in an industry, what I do see is a bit more competition. But not in the same way. I see them being more into the hustle, more into creating a new product, more into creating something to stand out, not just copying everyone else. So in the mermaid community, I'm one of the few outliers where I create my own original content. I create my own shows. I create my own scripts. I create my own trainings, you know, everything. And it's my ideas, my terms, my original thought. But I would see that more, for instance, in some other areas, I think, with more men, because then they want to show off that they're better than other guys, so they make something new. And with women, it seems like, oh, well, she did it, so I should do that because it's only way too. And they don't really look outside the box and figure out what can I do to improve myself and make myself a competitive edge. So it's unique. I mean, I wish that I could say, oh yeah, it's a sisterhood and we all love each other, but it's not. And sometimes you're really lucky to have, you know, the women on my team particularly. I mean, when I do open casting calls, there can be 450 girls applying for a spot. And we're very selective about who we take. Yeah, because I want to get, you know, a good human being. I want a girl that's not afraid to lend a hand to another girl and means it. I want a girl that's going to look out for another girl's back and help them when they see a problem before it happens, not just let them fall on their face. And who's willing to take safety seriously, who really loves clients and kids. You know, I mean, a pretty girl in LA is a dime a dozen, or actually probably even cheaper than that. It's LA. But when you find a really amazing person who's creative and hardworking, you know, that's also why the men on our team are the same way. We don't have as many men on the team, but each of them is extraordinary and genuinely cares about others and doing a great work every single day. And I think that that's rather special. So I'm really blessed to have them.
I sometimes wonder if that it kind of equates the difference between female-dominated industries and male-dominated industries kind of comes down to the way that culture trains young women to be good people and trains young men to do good things. So when I see things like in magic, you know, it's all very action-driven. It's about the material. It's about what have you produced and what have you written and what have you done. Whereas when I go to other communities that I work in, I mean, Virginia and I met at a lecture I did that involved a lot of bubble talk, and a lot of the bubble community is female.
It was so good.
That's
I love that lecture.
That's very nice of you to say. That's so sweet. But what I noticed in the bubble community a lot, and also in face painting, which is another industry I'm tangentially part of that is female dominated, it's really about, like, it's a lot about being a good person. And it's a lot about, well, I'm the best, but it's not action driven. It's more about just general, like, I'm nice and I am these things, not I've done these things. It's much more about who you are. And so I think it's easy to get sensitive and get upset about things when women are trained that what we do is actually more just about our identity.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got something there. And I would agree that, you know, with the princesses as an example, with it's a community, it's all about their looks and they age out and they're very aware of it. And it's just our society, unfortunately, is not very forgiving for women past 30. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about the men, I do definitely see more pride in what they accomplish because it's like a scoreboard, right? You hit the touchdown or sorry, I just mix up two of my sports. Shows how much I care about football.
Yeah, I wouldn't even notice. Kayla will notice.
Right. But with women, I definitely do see it's all about their pretty photo. Do they look good? Were they nice? Or also this like unfortunate thing, which I think is very toxic in the female community as business people, where women are told, oh, if you're nice, you're going to give away all your IP and all your hard work for free. Men don't do that. Men have a price for their work and their advice. And they're not afraid to say it. Men also say that they're worth a much higher amount, while women will always be looking for how can they add more value. I mean, adding value is great. But at the same time, you know, if you're having trouble supporting yourself, you shouldn't be giving away that free stuff and driving without compensation and, you know, telling someone exactly how to run your business so they can copy you to, quote, be nice. I think that that's actually very, very harmful. And I think that it's a terrible thing that we treat young girls about you have to share everything. It's like, no, you actually don't. And in business, you shouldn't. But that's what they've been brainwashed to do, where I think a man's world is a bit more of you're going for the same goal and best person wins based on their ability. And honestly, archery also taught me that because I have a male coach for archery. I'm a master teacher. He's a 2-time world champion. And he instilled that in me about, you know, if you lose that competition, you have no one to blame but yourself. And that person just happened to have a better day. Maybe you should go and practice more. So that's much more of a male perspective, where if it was a female coach, stereotypically, I would probably expect it to say, oh, that's so sorry. You know, yeah, you totally should have gotten that instead of her. It's a totally different approach. And I think that in that regard, men are brought up a bit more to have accountability for their skills and also to understand a bit more if they're going to be a competitor, because not all men are, but if they're going to succeed, that they should really put in the time, because that's what it's going to take to outrun that guy. Mm-hmm.
So you run the LA Mermaid School, and because it's a female dominated industry, I kind of have a handle on that, but the idea of, because you do a lot of archery private lessons and parties and lots of, you know, of this archery, crossbow, all of this. Do you ever find people react just or have a reaction to being taught this sport by a woman? Either people who already know archery going, oh, a woman is teaching this, or somebody that you've hired for a party, they're like, oh, I just wasn't expecting a woman.
Yes, actually, I do. And let me elaborate on that.
Please.
When we're talking about archery, people full well know they're getting a woman coach. And some actually come to me because of that, where they feel safer being in a private lesson with a person of their own gender. So I see that mostly with moms, especially with daughters, where they feel more comfortable having a person of their same gender because they feel safer. It's also unfortunate that even that would even cross someone's mind, because I think that's a terrible cultural phobia, where men coaches have had very amazing men coaches my entire life. And they've always been the most upstanding people. But the fact that women would even think of that and choose me, it's a little concerning. But at the same time, I mean, I'm happy to serve them, obviously. When I also encounter women, a lot of them will say that the male coaches they encountered didn't pay attention to them. And they wanted a coach that would. And it might have been that they were trying to flirt with them, or they were just ignoring them. And they just wanted to have a coach that would take them seriously because they were serious about learning. So I have the standard deal with both my male and female clients about, you're paying me for my time. And if you want to waste that time, that's your business. If you want me to make you exceptional, then I will. But you need to put in the time. So my students, for my private clients, as well as my film clients and that stuff, they hire me because I'm good and that I get very quick results and that I will take the shortcuts for them where I know that it's the best way of teaching, so that that way they don't flounder and they're not wasting their money or their time. So all of my clients that are with that are really results driven and also have a specific goal in mind, which is wonderful. That's why I coach archery, because it's very fulfilling to see people grow and also to see and encourage people where, as an example, I have this one African-American young girl training with me. She's about 13 and she's not the best in school and she's not motivated by a lot of sports, but she just thought that archery was amazing and she wanted to do it. And she kept asking her mom, and they save quite a bit. And I have a discount program with them because she's worth coaching. And she tries hard every time and she generally loves it. Or I have another little girl who's about 9. And, you know, for her 4th birthday, she was like Artemis, Goddess of the Hunt. And for her 6th birthday, she was Katniss. And for her like 8th birthday, she was Brave. And this little kid just, she knows that she wants it. And she's a wonderful student that takes it seriously and practices. And, you know, why wouldn't I coach that? It's much different with the party clients, where I see a lot of unfortunate stereotypical behavior and blatant discrimination happen. I think because I am in archery, where it's archery as a sport, you either hit it or you don't. You're either good or you're not. It's very black and white. It's all points driven. None of it is subjective. In entertainment, it's very subjective. It's very about what people think is the appropriate thing. So as an example, I have a female dominated team because I found those women that are very driven. And while I have some men on my call sheet, I unfortunately have had more trouble finding men that want to work in a team environment that are also willing to work as hard as they need their skills to be. But the women are willing to put in the time. So I have these extraordinary people that might have trained for 5 months, like 30 to 40 hours a week with me, who are completely qualified for their job, overly qualified for the job. And yet I'll get a Halloween client mom and she wants a pirate and the boys are already booked because she's calling 2 weeks before a party. I'm like, yeah, I've got this amazing girl pirate available. And they'll literally tell me on the phone, oh, we can't have a girl. She won't be able to handle them.
What?
Or, oh God, no, you know, women aren't knights. Women aren't pirates. Women aren't scientists, blah, blah, blah. And it's infuriating to me because, I mean, I have done all this stuff and I'm like, you know what, you're wrong. And it's that fine line about telling off a potential client and being like, okay, this is your stereotype, I understand. And it doesn't just stop there in Hollywood. I mean, I also have done a lot of diversity outreach with my company because I think it's important for girls to see people that look like them growing up, because then they can embody them and look up to them. It doesn't mean that they can't to someone else. I do just find that, you know, a 5-year-old, if you have brown hair and they have brown hair, all of a sudden you're friends. And that's just the way they work. It's like tribalism at its base. But, you know, I was one of the first companies to have LGBT performers. I was one of the future companies to have an Asian mermaid, a black mermaid. And sometimes I would get on these calls and I remember this one mom, and she literally was telling me, it's like, look, I'm not trying to be racist here, but don't send me an Asian. And I'm like, what do you think that means?
Wow.
You know, you just were. And that happens all the time. Or the thing about booking people based on prettiness. I don't know that male magicians, as an example, have that problem.
Right. So true.
I would assume that they probably are like, are you my budget? Are you funny? Do you entertain my kids? Rather than, are you a size 0? Do you have a good enough face? Do I like your costume? And it's so backwards to me. But at the same time, that is, again, the industry. So, you know, you're just trying to look for ways that you can promote people or relate to them in a better way. For instance, like some of the girl performers, if I have a mom that has a boy, I know it's going to be a problem. And I'll just start saying, it's like, oh my gosh, it's like the best school teacher you ever had mixed with the most amazing camp counselor. These girls have been in summer camps. They've had brothers growing up. They're super active. And I stress that because then that mom understands that. And it doesn't always work. I definitely lose a lot of jobs because it's not a boy and they want a boy regardless if they're qualified. But at the same time, you know, okay, that's their choice. So very interesting, but also the same thing you see at parties where you really see the foundation of childhood behavior and attitudes towards gender and appropriateness, where I also do face painting like Carissa, and I don't care what I paint on the kid as long as it's appropriate. So if a girl wants to be the Joker, cool. If a boy wants a pink dragon, cool. Whatever. It's creativity. And I'll literally frequently have mothers of boys come up and the boy likes pink. Cool. It's a hot pink. I don't blame him. It's a great color. And he wants a pink dragon. And she'll say, oh, no, 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 no. You can't have that. You know, you need green or blue instead. And they'll stop the child from getting it. And it's most often, I rarely see men ever do that. I think in 6 years of work, I've had one dad do that kind of behavior. It's almost always a female. And they're training the boys that it's inappropriate. Or alternately, you know, those classic things where the boy wants a princess party. And some moms are cool enough to say, cool, Elsa's coming. And some moms are like, there's something wrong with you. And the kid just likes the fact that she has ice powers, right? And goes on adventures. They don't see it that way. But I definitely see adults programming them that way.
Yeah. So upsetting.
But that's how we put good role models out there, right? Like, if we can honestly just be able to be like to the mom and say, you know what? Would you like a green dragon? Because he wants the pink one or something like that.
One of the things Kayla and I are really excited about is after everything that you've accomplished and everything you've done, you have an interest in magic, obviously. You've got way more skills than you give yourself credit for. And right now, you are working on your audition for your magician membership at the Magic Castle. And so you have all of this experience behind you of working in male-dominated industries and female-dominated industries and all this different experience. And when you come to a place like the castle, when you're bringing all that experience with you, what do you see that we might not see?
Well, Magic Castle is like my favorite place ever. I definitely hang out there and I'm a total magic nerd. So my friends and family know this about me. And like, as an example, like my bedtime story right now is by Silly Billy and I'm reading his book, or I'll just be like binge watching DVDs. Or I'm also a member of KEA, Kids and Entertainment Academy. And I'm working on their Build Your Own Magic course. And it's really fun because I mean, something that I really encountered at the Magic Castle is opportunity. And what was interesting is I always, when I'm dressed up in a cocktail dress, because I like dressing up, it's one of the few places you can totally be a girl and go to town and wear your best heels and an awesome silk dress. But what I will always notice is that when I am there with a date, and I try to start a conversation with somebody, then they'll look at the man. And they'll try to talk to him about magic. And the normal thing is they don't know anything about magic. And I'm like, oh, yeah. You want to talk about that thing? Oh, yeah, I know that. And it's the funniest thing. And they're like, wait, you? And it's like, yeah, me. And it's like, I understand, because it would be like, honestly, the same thing if you went into like the mermaid community and started talking to a girl, but it was actually the guy that was the mermaid, so to speak. It would be the same thing. And it would be a generalization assumption. But then normally at the Magic Castle, the nice thing is when I get talking, then they're like, oh, you actually do know something about that. I'm like, huh? And then they'll actually talk to me and they'll like try to just like show me something, and that's fun. I think what is interesting though is because I came from such a diverse background, as well as obviously being a female, you're familiar with the female fairy tales, not the male stories, but you also get female stories and those archetypes, is the sheer opportunity for women in magic, because they are attracted to different things. I've actually joked around, I think, with Carissa quite a bit about, I'm so sick of coin tricks and card tricks. And it's not that I dislike it, nor do I have any disrespect whatsoever for the amount of complete talent it takes to do them. I'm just bored. And it's because normally when I see a male magician at the Magic Castle, they're doing one of them. When I tried and I wouldn't say I flunked out, I would say I dropped out of magic school at the Magic Castle. The reason why I did was I was bored and they wanted to teach me card tricks and coin tricks, and I didn't want to do those. You know, I very much think in pictures. Like, I think a lot of women work in stories. We work in music. We work in song. We work in movement. We work in color. It's a different way of visual expression. And I wanted to learn more about that. So that's why, you know, I'm hanging out with the kids entertainers. And I look actively for things that are not coin tricks and card tricks. But I understand, coming from like an engineering background, okay, yeah, analytical men like that stuff. It doesn't mean that I don't respect it. It just means that I don't want to see it. And I definitely don't want to do it if I don't want to see it. So the entire story of me putting together this act because I do want it to be good. You know, I know that I could do some very competent things and it might be good enough. I don't know. I'm not a judge of the Magic Castle, but I want it to be good. And if I'm going to be a women magician at the Magic Castle, I want it to be something where it's not just, oh, you know, she's here because she's a girl and we need more girls, but oh yeah, she's here. And did you see, she's great. I think that that matters more. So that's why I'm being so meticulous about this act and the character and the costumes and all the stuff, because I care about it. And I think that that's really good. It was interesting, actually, the other week I was at a Misty Lee taping and it was so fabulous to watch her work. Talk about someone that can run a stage. Misty was there running a news shoot and I got the typical question at the end of it about, isn't it nice to see a female magician? And it was like, of course it is. Of course. But at the same time, I corrected them and said, yeah, it was amazing to see a good female magician. I'm so thankful to see a good magician any day I'm here.
Oh, nice.
And I think that's more of it, where there's a little bit of that worry and that stigma, where what I would hate to see happen is women in magic just being pushed as we have to do it for demographic equality, because should it be open to women? Absolutely. But should women also be expected to be good, to care about the craft, to practice? I think that's really important too, because that's the only way you really get equality is through respect. And that's from coming to mutual playing field, saying you're both equal competitors, so to speak, if you're thinking in sports analogies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have an audition date?
No, because I'm one of those people where I need a date on my calendar in order to be able to, like, devote my time to it. Because otherwise, running my company, the paid clients always take priority. So they wouldn't allow me to pick an audition date and have that for my project plan, because I am that much of a nerd. So I keep not signing up for an audition date because I don't have anything to make my project plan. Because the Magic Castle, wonderful people that they are like, oh, yeah, you should come, like, in 2 weeks or like next month. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, I've got all these gigs between now and then. Yeah. Like, please, like, let me pick a date 6 months from now. So that way I have my project plan and it's all precise. Because again, I care and I want it to be good, which is absurd. You know, I should just go do it, but that's why I haven't. And at the same time, I'm having the best time working on my act like everyone does.
That's so great. I'm so excited to see it.
I am too. So I think it's going to be something really cool. And I mean, the other alternative thing is, like, I mean, I've definitely been influenced by a couple of key male magicians that I just thought were inspiring, that I love their character work because it's very character driven character. And then at the same time, like, I feel pretty good where, you know, when I bring us to public view, because I have spent so many years just studying it and watching acts and meeting people and knowing what's out there, I know it's fresh. And I think that that's really a good place to have in your mind, because it's unlike the mermaids, which are like, oh yeah, well, they just knocked off, you know, Melinda or whatever. It's not. It's nobody has this act. It's authentic. And I think that's going to hopefully be something people will want to see, because it's just different. And who doesn't like a new story?
Yes, this is so great. Okay, so now we are moving on to the lightning round of the episode. We're going to ask you some quick questions, and as much as possible, we want, like, one sentence answers as quick as you can go. Okay, first question.
What's your favorite magic routine you've ever seen?
Okay, so, like, I loved it when the starship appeared over me and when I was watching Copperfield. That was probably my favorite gimmick I've ever seen a magician do. It was fabulous, and I was so happy. But if we're talking about the classic, what's my absolute favorite thing, it will be zombie ball. I never get bored of seeing a really great zombie ball act.
Oh, that's nice. So true. Do you have any, is there any, like, female performers that you would love to give a shout out to that people don't necessarily know about and you'd be like, you have to see this lady?
Yes. Everyone on this podcast probably knows Suzanne. If you do not know Suzanne, go meet Suzanne. She's actually at the Magic Castle next week, which is about October 20th. And I see her every time she's in town, and I've seen her act at least 20 times. And every time I'm the happiest person alive that I got to see it. So definitely awesome person to see.
So great. Oh, totally agree. Okay. You do everything, but what is something that you don't do and you're like, I would like to maybe do that one day?
Oh, that's a good question. Because normally I fall into them because I'm like, oh, yeah, that. Actually, I would love to learn how to make saddlery for a horse by leather.
Oh. Yeah, leather work. That's definitely an easy one. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah, like building a saddle from scratch. Why not?
That's so cool.
She'll be opening a school in like 3 years on how to build
she'll be the
saddle.
Most, she'll be the world's most famous saddlery. Right.
No problem. You're amazing.
So the tagline of our podcast is the podcast that hopes to make itself obsolete, because we think that in a world that had better gender equality, a podcast like this for the magic community would become unnecessary. What do you think would have to happen for this podcast to become obsolete?
In order for this podcast to become obsolete, I think what has to happen is that women have to be willing to work just as hard as the men in order to be accepted by them, and know that that is the test, and there's nothing wrong with it. The men hold themselves to the same accountability, and that they respect people that work just as hard as they do. So be that. And I also think that men would hopefully help to mentor more women. And when they see those amazing girls that do want to learn and want to learn just as much, just to give them the grace of taking on a great student and being happy and thankful for having a great student, regardless of who they are.
Oh, that's great.
What's your favorite dessert?
I make a really, really good box bot, although I am like, Kristen knows this, I make gourmet meals all the time. I love to cook. It's so creative. But anyhow, my indulgence I'm going to make after this call, because I'm really on a sugar rush, is they have this thing called Thin Mint Brownie Mix in the baked goods aisle. And it's like the only thing I don't make is a dessert from scratch, but it's Thin Mint cookies in brownie form. It's so good.
Oh my goodness.
Of course you make everything from scratch.
Of course you do. Okay, now this is very important. This next question is extremely, extremely important. So don't just answer on instinct. You really have to think about it. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Yes, a hot dog is a sandwich because technically it is surrounded by two pieces of bread, even though the hinge has not been broken.
Controversy. Okay, last question.
I'm over here like, no, it's not.
Right.
All right. One last question. How do I become a mermaid?
You go to LA Mermaid School and you sign up for 101. We actually take general public for mermaid school, where there's an introduction class called Mermaiding 101. And LA Mermaid School provides the fabric training tails and the instruction and the pool and everything. You just show up with a swimsuit and a good attitude, and we teach you how to swim in a fin.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm doing it
we
now.
We have to do that thing. Virginia, thank you so very much for joining us. We really appreciate you being on the podcast with us.
You're so welcome, girls. It's been such a pleasure, and thank you for having me, and I hope to see both of you soon, because I miss you both terribly and would love to hang out.
Please.
Yes, please. We'll definitely have to do cocktail hour in fancy outfits at some point.
Magic Castle.
You guys are amazing hosts. Thank you for being such great interviewers.
Thank you. Oh, that Virginia, was this was so fun. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, your insight was really, really important. And I think it was a perspective we definitely couldn't get anywhere else. Mm.
Well, I really hope that out of that, hopefully it'll encourage people to be a bit more balanced. Because guys aren't the enemy. Women have to work harder. And also at the same time, don't turn someone down just because of what they were born.
This podcast is funded in part through support from the Endowment and Development Fund of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. Thank you so much for helping us out, you guys. We really appreciate it.